from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Alex, when people ask me a question like that, it's like, coming back here is not easy. The racism that I played here, when I played here, the difficulty of going through different places where we traveled. Fortunately, I had a manager and I had players on the team that helped me get through it. But I wouldn't wish it on anybody.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
That was the voice of Reggie Jackson. An incredible visit with Fox's MLB pregame show before the game at Rickwood Field in Alabama on Thursday night. That is part of the lasting soundbite to come out of that, about 3.5 minute chunk that's out there. I trust that you've heard it by now. I hope that you've heard it by now. Reggie talking about the horrific and racist treatment he endured while a member of the Birmingham Barons, or was it the Birmingham A's? I think it's the Birmingham A's in Alabama in the late 60s. And it really, it gives a window into the seriousness of the situation for decades and recently, not just decades and decades ago. And still now, as Reggie can't just go there and have a good old happy time in Birmingham, when his life and his experience is filled with much more than that. Was thinking I wanted to talk about this today and thought I would welcome in our teammate here at 670, the Score, guy I talk a lot of baseball with on the air and off the air. And he is Lawrence Holmes from the Bernstein and Holmes Show. Joins us right now on the Circus Sports Illinois Hotline. Download the Circus Sports app today. Lawrence, welcome to the Score. You've been here before, sir.
It's new here. It's interesting.
It is, right?
Thanks for the welcome. I appreciate the opportunity to come and hang out on Hit and Run.
Thanks, man. So what do you think the importance of the anger and the realness that Reggie Jackson brought to that event and to this whole week of conversation has been?
We tend to do this more with baseball than anything else. Like the romanticism of baseball, and I get it. Like, how can you not be romantic about baseball, right? Like, that's the line about it. Because of what the game means to us, maybe even more than what Major League Baseball has meant to us, the idea of connection through generations of Americans and their experience, that thing binds us. But whenever we start to look at baseball backwards, and primarily when we start discussing issues of what the great game was, when we have like a guy like Bob Kendrick on, who is so poetic in the way that he talks about the game, that people will tend to not take away the fact that there was a lot of struggle involved. And I think that's what Reggie Jackson gave voice to, and I'm glad that he did. There should be a celebration of Rickwood Field. There should be a celebration of all of the incredible players that helped make that place a very special place. If you haven't gone, I recommend going. Birmingham's a really fun city, but just go and you can feel some of the history there. We tend to only talk about the good history, though. And what I thought was interesting about it is it gave us a window into the pain of Reggie Jackson. Now, I don't know if Reggie has been taciturn because he's just that way, or his experience and experiences like that helped form a harder shell around a man. So I'm glad that in what was a very celebratory week in Birmingham, as it should have been, that there was a level of realness that he brought to the conversation that I felt was necessary. I thought that Fox did a great job with their pregame. Like I told Dan this on Friday, I thought their pregame was A+. I thought their broadcast was C, C-. And part of the reason that I thought it was C, C minus is you were doing this game, and no disrespect to the guys that were doing it, because I think that all of them are very good professionally, but you look up on that broadcast and there were four white guys doing the broadcast. And then when they blend into the sepia tone of, and let's kind of harken back to those days, those guys are, I don't want to say they're not qualified, but are reluctant to talk about the experience of many ball players that came through Birmingham. So I thought that what Reggie did offered up an opportunity for people to understand that it isn't just old-timey music and colorful uniforms and just great players. The struggle that a lot of those players went through, almost all of those players went through, is as important to the history of the game as the incredible over-the-shoulder catch.
That's well said, and it's just so, it's so immediately accessible when a guy like Reggie talks about it. And for those of us fans of a certain age, Reggie was an active icon in our baseball consciousness, man. It's like, I mean, there's the Reggie who won titles in Oakland and the Reggie who was in the Naked Gun. But like in the middle was Reggie, the biggest sports star in the world, it seemed. Like right up there with Muhammad Ali when Reggie and the Yankees are going to the World Series every year and he's hitting three homers on three swings and he's pissed off. He's pissed off that entire time in New York, whether it's at Billy Martin or George Steinbrenner or the press, and he's braggadocious and all of that. And there is not a full understanding of what made that man tick, really, for me. There was not a full understanding on my perspective of what made that man tick until I heard him the other night. And I thought about, right? It's like now I get about a certain percentage of the emotion that was inside that dude forever.
I think it allows us to see things differently. I also think that part of it, and we can globalize it and make it like a bigger discussion about history. In American history, because there's so much damage that's been done, whether we're talking about Native people, whether we're talking about Black people, whether we're talking about European immigrants that made their way here in the 1800s and early 1900s, we tend to not want to talk about that because there is a level of guilt that some people feel associated with, and they don't want to take the blame for it because they didn't do it. They rightfully are like, well, wait, I'm not part of that problem, without realizing some of the structures that are in place that allow those people to still benefit from some of this stuff that has divided us overall. Yeah. So it's hard, you know, like, because you can talk to people of Irish descent and what their experience was like. Talk to people of Italian descent and what their experience, what their grandparents, what their great grandparents' experience was like. Some people tend to just go, well, I just want to move on. The Black experience is so ingrained in the history of the United States that it makes it impossible to move on when there isn't an opportunity for people to actually reflect and go, oh, this is connected to this, and this is connected to this, and that's why there's this, or partly why there's this. The point that Dan made about that being someone, for those of us of a certain age, like Reggie Jackson and his celebrity, it being something that happened in our lifetime, people they struggle with the concept of it. Like these systems that are in place, Speaks, like this isn't an abstract. Like this happened. And what I appreciate is that he gave voice to a bunch of folks. Like I was saying to Dan on Friday, I had a conversation with my parents last week, and it wasn't even about baseball. It was just about life. And my mom was telling me about how when she was a kid, she couldn't go into Marshall Fields. You know, we had been in the city for the weekend, and you know, as we were driving around the city, like there was some reminiscing. My father talked about being in the Army and there were places that he thought were really surprisingly tolerant of seeing him in his uniform, like Texas, strangely enough.
Hmm.
And then there were places that weren't as tolerant seeing him in an Army uniform. Folks don't want to take blame for something that they didn't do. They also don't want to have their own life or their experience diminished by, oh, well, I work really hard. You're right. Like it, and that should be discussed. But the fact that you might have gotten a head start in some of these situations is directly connected to the systems that are in place.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Like baseball history gives us this opportunity to get it messy, to have it live in our heads messy, because it is messy. You can't just sanitize it and clean it up and pretend everything is good. And I appreciate that Reggie made it messy again, because it is. It is, and it's okay to have it be that way. It's okay to not have it be all good or all bad, says the guy, me, who struggled with that for the first, I'd say the first half to two-thirds of my life to date. Like, it's good or it's bad. No, it's good with problems, or it's bad with possible upsides, and that's okay to experience. When I think about Reggie Jackson's persona, that's when I started the other night thinking about Dick Allen's persona.
And
that's why I thought of you and wanted to have you on, because man, Dick Allen, the former White Sox great
MVP.
MVP, an absolute killer as a member of the Phillies, just incredible player and incredibly ebullient, interesting personality, was a guy who was unhappy in the 60s. Little bit surly, a little bit grumpy, and I'm sure there were reasons why. But he also drank a little bit, would show up a little bit late, and this was all happening at a similar time when Mickey Mantle was drinking a little bit and showing up a little bit late.
Yep.
And yet there was a lot of press, a lot of writers and eventual Hall of Fame voters who cast Dick Allen as this problematic person when they genuinely whitewashed the similar deeds of a lot of other people. And I realized as I was thinking about it and kind of digging into it a little bit on Friday, and then I reached out to you, like 50-year-old problematic press is still what has kept him out of the Hall of Fame, isn't it?
Uh-huh. And some of the bias is right there in front of your face. Some of it is inherent. Like some of the people don't even know that that's what it is that they were doing. But when let's have fun with numbers, okay?
Okay.
Dick Allen, a 58.7 wins above replacement in his career. His slash line, 292, 378, 534. That's an OPS of 912. That's an OPS plus of 156. He has an MVP, a Rookie of the Year, and 7 All-Stars. By any metric, that is a Hall of Fame resume. And yet, he never got the opportunity. And it's funny because a lot of times, there are times in the history of baseball where people with bigger-than-life personalities have benefited from it.
Mm-hmm.
And then there are times when someone who maybe isn't in lockstep with what you think a player is finds himself on the outside looking in at some of these. He had seasons of OPSs above 1,000, had 3 of them in his career. And you look at that and you just go, what happened here? And there's some gatekeeping that goes on, that whether those writers want to admit it or not, that they looked at their relationship with Dick Allen and said, I'll get him. I'll get him when it comes to my vote
yep.
on the Hall of Fame. And that's the type of stuff where you do wonder what was the motivation of people, because his credentials are, you can't knock the credentials of what he did in his career.
No, you can't. It of what he did. And it's like, it's tough, man, because I was reading about him and he wrote in his memoir, I wonder how good I could have been. Even as good as he was, he wonders how good he could have been. My career could have been a joy, a celebration. Instead, I played angry. In baseball, if a couple things go wrong for you, those things get misperceived or distorted, you get a label. I was labeled an outlaw, and after a while, that's what I became.
Yep.
Oh, man, it just broke my heart a little bit, because, like, how difficult must it be to stay positive and like, energized when everybody's telling you you're this, you're telling you you're this, and then it's a game of failure that tells you that it might be true every once in a while, and eventually just started to believe it.
Let me spin that to the present, because I think it's really interesting to hear those words from Dick Allen, and I worry that Angel Reese is going to fall into the same category.
Mm.
And I've heard her say, well, you know, the game wants me to be the bad guy and I'll be the bad guy. And I'm like, no, you don't have to be the bad guy.
Damn.
You don't have to allow us to put the white hat on Caitlin Clark and the black hat on you.
But college was already doing it. I mean, she came in with it being done to her.
And I mean, they're doing it right now. And it's amazing, like, seeing her interactions, like even the other day. The sky, she has that game where she sets the double-double record for rookies. And they're at the podium, and it's her and Marina Mabry and Kennedy Carter. So Angel finishes, and she gets up. And you open the door to the media room, and there are just, like, hundreds of kids screaming for Angel Reese. And it's so much that Marina and Kennedy just started laughing while they were on the podium. That's the type of impact that she can have. And it's her choice. Like, I don't want to take any of her choices away. I just think that when you hear a cautionary tale like Dick Allen's, and you see that Angel Reese has got, she could have this city, like, in the palm of her hands. But she is already a star. She is already one of the biggest stars here. And it's stories like Dick Allen's where you go, you don't want someone with that type of talent to become embittered and then become the monster that people have put on them.
Mm. The sky and the Fever play at 3 o'clock today. There's a Sandberg statue unveiling at 3 o'clock today. The White Sox and the Tigers play. And of course, the biggest news, Eloy Jimenez is healthy and batting third, and he is the designated hitter. I can only assume this is the beginning of a healthy run where Eloy fully realizes his potential as a ball player. Don't you think, Lawrence?
I feel like we've been saying that for the better part of a decade.
Jim Bowden had him in his possible breakout players to begin the year, and I was like, come on, man. You can't do that. You can't.
What's really sad about it is that Eloy is like the opposite of what we've just been talking about.
Yeah.
He is someone who is filled with tremendous joy. And that joy, it's effervescent. Like, it comes across where anyone who's ever been around the guy or watched the guy play the game, you go, hey, there's a guy who really loves playing baseball. And the irony of his body failing him so that he can't play baseball is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
All the things that you think are possible with Eloy and how smooth his bat makes it through the zone.
The easy power, man.
Yes.
It's crazy.
Yes.
You know.
It makes you really, really sad. And just real quick, I know I spend a lot of time, like I spend a majority of my adult life talking about the White Sox as a White Sox fan. As a kid, and even through college, Rhino was my favorite player. And when I was real little, that was the guy that I wanted to be. And I think that guy, I'm so happy that he's getting a statue, and I'm happy that he's seemingly doing well and that he can be a part of all this flower bringing that's going on with him right now.
Mm-hmm.
The guy is incredible. And I remember even as a kid, people knocking his defense or Sandberg doesn't dive. Sandberg didn't have to dive because he's 6'4".
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have to dive for some of those balls. And it always bothered me when people would talk about his defense at second base. I'm like, this guy was amazing.
Yeah, he was.
Watching him play. So I'm glad that he is getting his statue.
Yeah, man, me too. And in some ways, It just from the pure baseball perspective, the five-tool nature of Sandberg with power and hitting and defense and speed, you know, it's been nice. It's been nice to have him swimming with Willie Mays in our baseball thoughts. You know, there's enough room for a lot of players who fit in that way. All right, Lawrence, it was great to see you last night at Roy Wood Jr., and I'll see you tomorrow right here on The Score.
Yes, sir. Thanks, Speaks. I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, man. That's Lawrence Holmes right there on 670 The Score. Sandberg statue coming up at 3 o'clock today. We're talking to Bob Costas in about 40 minutes. Let's go to the phone lines, though. Ron is on the south side and is on Hit and Run this morning. Good morning, Ron.
But I tell you, you know, I've been with The Score from day one. I enjoyed that conversation with you and Lawrence probably more than any conversation I've heard. Really have a lot of respect for him and his honesty. Now, okay, let me get to the reason I call the savior.
Yeah.
Dick Allen. Goose Gossett saved the best player he'd ever seen. Roland Heeman. They called him the savior.
Yeah.
I've been trying to research some years back. They had a celebration for him. And one of the newspapers said, the savior gets his day. Hmm. He saved the team. Hmm. The team in the 70s, 69, 70, 71, wasn't drawing any fans. There's a lot going on. It was almost as bad as it is now. One player simply saved the Chicago White Sox. This is beyond his numbers, but speed. You can argue, because I looked at the numbers, the season he had, 1972, he just missed the Triple Crown, but he had the home runs, the RBIs, he just had missed the average. But he had 19 stolen bases, I believe, 12 triples. The man had two inside the park home runs. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
In the Sparky Lyle game, I got both of the books on the hot dog game. He's sitting in the dugout. He wasn't going to play in that second game. He came in, hit the home run. They said he had never heard Sox Park sound like that. They said 50,000. It was a season like no other season. And it was just, Jack, this is one of the saddest days for me as a baseball fan when he did not get into a Hall of Fame. If Lawrence throws out all the numbers, but it's all those good seasons Frank Thomas had, 84 Ryan Sandberg, I still say that was probably one, it was the best season for any baseball player. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Thank
just
you,
enjoy
Ryan.
The conversation with you and Lawrence, you know, two guys that I have utmost respect for.
Hey, Ron, appreciate it, man. It means a lot. This is Jim in Grays Lake on 670 The Score. Jim, what's happening? Good morning.
Hey, Matt. Been a little while. I haven't talked to you in a bit.
Thanks for calling.
I was there yesterday. The energy was amazing with the 84 team and whatnot. But why I wanted to call is, and I hope Lawrence is still listening, is just to thank you guys. You know, when we get into these types of conversations, and Lawrence said it the other day, he's like, read the comments, right? We've got a long way to go. And look, I'm a white male that grew up in the suburbs, right? Like I haven't experienced any of the things that are being talked about, but it's so important to keep talking about it. And just anytime somebody says stick to sports, just keep doing what you guys are doing. I just wanted to say thank you to you and Danny and Lawrence, and yes, even Dan. You guys are sorry.
You know, you're good.
I had to throw that in there.
No, you're good, Jim.
You guys are doing great work. I really appreciate the fact that you guys continue to have these really difficult conversations because it's so important.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it, Jim. I mean, sports offers the backdrop. That's why. It is sports. We are talking sports. I mean, it just is, and sometimes it ends up being part of the coverage, whether you realize it's happening or not. So it's an opportunity. And I got to say, in terms of baseball has to live with its ugly past on a continuous basis. And it's really unlike most other sports in that way, in terms of racial strife. I mean, I mean, a dude mentioned Ty Cobb today. A dude mentioned Babe Ruth today. I struggle with putting people like that on the Mount Rushmore because they didn't play against everybody. I just heard an unbelievable interview about Satchel Paige just this week on Fresh Air. And it was like, I learned so much that I hadn't known about Satchel Paige. Maybe I'll talk about it during the course of the week. But like, and his friendship with Dizzy Dean and what they shared as barnstormers together and how Satchel felt about Jackie Robinson being the choice to break the color barrier and Satchel wished it was him. And it was messy. It was human, man. It's like, you know, we think of Satchel Paige and like, oh, yeah, he was a great baseball player and a great barnstormer. No, dude had a crazy, tumultuous life where he had to be courageous and dealt with all kinds of stuff. And it's like, what an opportunity to learn about humanity and to stay in touch with it that sports provides. I will never pass up the opportunity. All right, baseball conversation. We'll talk about the Sandberg game and Willie Mays with Bob Costas in about 35 minutes. Who's the closer on the Cubs if they have a closing chance today? Is it Colton Brewer? We'll ask him next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking Spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel. Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
Two down, ninth inning. Cubs lead 6-5. And the next pitch. Ground ball to Horner. He's got it. Throws to first. Cubs win. The Cubs win the ball game. Very nice job by Colton Brewer getting the save.
Colton's had a lot of experiences, I think, as you know, if he's been in this game for a long time, and they haven't been maybe in that setting, but he's had a lot of experiences, so you trust that and you believe in that.
So I watched Colton Brewer get the save the other day. And then I heard Craig Counsell talk about the volume of experiences of Colton Brewer. And I'm like, all right, well, I need to dig back into Colton Brewer's bio and his history. And then I'm looking at him like, man, dude has lived a baseball life already. And then I'm like, all right, now we need to talk to this guy. So we made the request and excited to bring him in right now. You're listening, by the way, to Hit and Run with me, Matt Spiegel, right here on 670 The Score. And joining us now is Colton Brewer of the Cubs on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline. CircaLasVegas.com is where you can go. Colton, good morning. How are you? Thanks for coming on.
Hey, good morning, Matt. Good to have you.
Hey Matt. Nice to have you. So would you have ever guessed that your first save comes at Wrigley Field on a Friday afternoon at age 31, sir, when you were drafted in 2011? That's quite a journey to get there to that particular stat, isn't it?
Well, for sure. I was beginning to think for a little bit that I was never going to get a save. But you know what? I would have never thought it would have been at Wrigley, but I'm so glad it was at that ballpark, because Wrigley, like out of all the ballparks I've played, I've always said that Wrigley is just like something different about it.
Well, that's awesome. Well, I mean, you have played in the big leagues for the Padres, for the Red Sox, for the Yankees, and now the Cubs, but part of the Pirates organization early on, so. What is it about Wrigley, of all the ballparks that you've experienced, Colton?
You know, just like most people talk about the neighborhood feel with it, it just kind of feels like summer ball to me. You know, like the family's around and, you know, everybody's just having good vibes. I just love the sights and sound of Wrigley over, you know, I've played in Fenway. And that place is amazing, don't get me wrong, but like it's just something about Wrigley that just has more of a neighborhood feel to it. And sport home.
Yeah, it's 3 years of Fenway. I went to college out there in Boston and have seen that place a lot, but Wrigley's better. It's okay to say it out loud, especially because we're on here in Chicago.
No, for sure. Yes, yes, yes. I would agree with you.
And they got the renovations better, too, from the fan perspective. It's way more comfortable.
Yeah, they're allowed to, like, renovate some more and stuff. I guess that's just what Fenway's missing. But, you know, it's, you know, what they've done with the clubhouse and, you know, just around Wrigleyville is a sight to see itself.
Yeah, just speaking of the clubhouse, you've been in a lot of clubhouses, including in Japan, which I want to ask you about. But have you ever seen anyone set up like Wrigley's clubhouse is in that circle? This was Theo's big idea to have this circle and, like, have it be kind of the way it's set up there.
No, that is definitely unique. And, you know, it's a place you can get lost in, which is a good thing because, you know, you want to stay in the locker room as long as possible. But I would say that the Cubs have it all figured out when it comes to amenities and, you know, treating their big league players like they're supposed to be treated. It's really amazing.
So have you thought of yourself as a closer, you know, along the way? I know there were four starts for the Red Sox at age 27 and in the 2020 season, but I mean, it's been bullpen for the better portion of your professional life, yes?
Yes, yes, it has. Well, I mean, since my career started, I was like my first few years with the Pirates where I was running through some bumps and bruises through there. So, like, I think relieving has really made a difference in my career for sure. And, you know, honestly, you know, being a reliever, closing is the ultimate goal for every one of us. And, you know, if I end up landing in a spot to where council can trust me enough to do whatever I can, like, I'm just happy to be here, honestly. And I'm going to make the most of every outing. So,
do you think the fact that you've been around and experienced a lot of stuff makes the ninth, I don't know, less emotionally and psychologically daunting, Colton?
I mean, if I said I wasn't nervous, I'd be lying to you. But now that I've gotten over that first initial outing in the ninth inning like that, you know, with the one-run ball game, I think, you know, every outing is kind of just like you get more comfortable in each outing, and then they throw you in a closing situation. It's like, okay, let's see what you're made of. And, you know, it's just trusting in yourself and trusting in yourself and, you know, honestly trusting in God at the end of the day.
So what happens to a pitcher when he's nervous? For a talk show host, when I'm nervous, when I've got some anxiety or whatever, I can tighten up and end my sentences early. And then I'm like, I could leave a partner hung out to dry. Just like I get a little tense. What happens to a pitcher?
It's pretty much the same thing. You know, those two walks in that inning was kind of just like, dang, what's just going on with them? Like, you know, that's part of nerves hitting you a little bit. And, you know, you get an out at a time and it just kind of eases back on you and you find yourself in the zone. And that's just when you realize, like, you just kind of got to take a deep breath and just be tough no matter what. Because, you know, not pitching good ain't going to do you no good. So, I mean, just don't be nervous, you know. Just continue to be tough and just know that you've done this before. Like, mm-hmm. That's what I would say.
Yeah. I'm talking to Colton Brewer here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score. So have the Cubs and, like, their pitch lab and their pitching infrastructure helped you change anything in terms of, I mean, you just got here, you know, it's signed in December. What have they helped with, if there's something specific that you could let us in on?
I would say that me and a couple of the pitching coaches, you know, Holmesy and Tommy.
Yeah,
it's kind of just the consistency thing that we were like trying to look for. It's like, dude, you're so good sometimes, and then like sometimes it's just like, what happens? I'm like, well, I just feel like the last couple of years I've just been trying to focus on one thing, and it's like getting better fastball. You know, getting better fastball execution. So I think me and Holmesy was just sitting there and just trying to get my front arm to just, you know, stay locked into the zone more. And I'm usually like a guy that kind of throws my head around when I pitch, but I guess that's just part of my style. And it's a habit that you're not going to be able to break, but I can minimize the shake in the head. So that's just what we've worked on mostly. and through other organizations and just learning other types of ways to get guys out is very helpful too.
That's
it. I also like the scouting reports that our staff does. It's simple. Some guys aren't into the simple part of it, but it works for me and I enjoy it.
Well, that's interesting. So it's different than the way the Yankees do it, than the way the Red Sox do it?
It's all kind of similar. I think that people kind of pick up on like what the Rays have done in the past is kind of like sit middle and let your stuff play to its best ability. And, you know, And I think the Cubs kind of just, I'm not saying they're copying the Rays, but I just think more teams are leaning towards this. But they'll just give you execution spots and from start to finish.
Gotcha.
That helps out a lot.
Yeah, that's interesting. What did you take away from your experience in Japan, Colton? I mean, for a kid who grew up in Texas and gets a chance to go play ball in Japan, what do you think from a life perspective? What do you bring from that?
I mean, it's just overall baseball experience from its core, and they're such an old style of baseball over there, and they're starting to progress a lot with guys just coming in and, you know, throwing hundreds of miles an hour, and it's just crazy the talent that comes from over there.
Yeah,
but it was baseball is hard over there, I would say. But I tell you what, they treat you like a celebrity. Like the fans love you, and you know you have a bad outing, they'll praise you about it. They'll say it's all right. We still love you, and you know they treat you like you're just some. Like a crazy big celebrity over there. And it's just like, and the food is amazing as well too. So, I mean, like I would just tell every baseball player out there, if you have a chance to like go to Japan, I would jump on it first thing.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Like, you know, why not?
You have to experience Japanese baseball.
And Japanese food, man. I mean, I love sushi. It's got to be a different kind of experience there. The freshness.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, it is a whole different world. It's amazing. And like I lived in Kobe, so like the steaks here haven't really been the same.
Oh, I bet that's true. Well, Colton Brewer, if there's a save situation today, you think you're getting it?
I don't know. I think it could be any one of us now. So I don't know. We'll see.
Man, it's fascinating. Craig tells us one thing, and then you guys know a different thing, but. But I mean, dude, maybe none of you know, and maybe that's healthy on some level.
No, yeah, I think it's just like, you know, we're all capable of kind of doing the same things out there. And if we can give Hector and Leiter a break from just, you know, just being out there constantly, and it's really a grind for that. You can just trust a few other guys. It just makes the bullpen as a whole so much better, I think.
Yeah. Hey, Colton, nice to talk to you, man. Nice to get to know you. Thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Hey, thank you, guys. I really appreciate this.
All right, you got it. That's Colton Brewer, who perhaps would be the closer today. I don't know. Hector Neris put out there yesterday in an 8-1 game and an opportunity just to kind of start to feel good. And if you didn't hear, Keegan Thompson is back. Luke Little went down to the minors. In terms of the White Sox, Eloy Jimenez is back. Just keeping you up to date on the news. We'll make sure you're up to date on absolutely everything. We'll squeeze in a couple more of your phone calls when we come back. And Bob Costas joins us at the top of the hour. Next hour, back to the White Sox as well. Later on in the next hour, we'll make sure we get there to the most recent worst moment of the White Sox season and a broadcaster towing the line. In the meantime, keep it right here on Hit and Run on 670 The Score.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
You're listening to 670 The Score. We'll talk to Bob Costas in 10 minutes or so. It is the day of the Ryan Sandberg statue reveal. The Cubs series against the Mets concludes tonight from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:35 with first pitch at 6:10. And the Score is the only local broadcast of the game. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. To the phone lines we go. This is Stan in Bellwood on 670 The Score. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm good. Good to hear you, Speaks, as usual. Great show. There's so much on the plate. I've been enjoying the show all day. I originally wanted to, when you began, I originally wanted to talk to you about the Mets, but you've been piling on so much more since then until I've changed my mind. Two things I wanted to touch on, Mays and Sandberg, but this is the first opportunity that I've had to pay my respects. I'm still in mourning, Speaks, about Mays' passing. The question that's often asked of people is, you know, when do you or did you realize that you were old? And for me, I'm officially certified as an old man because the three sports heroes of my youth are all gone now. Gail Sayers, Ollie, and Willie Mays were the three athletes when I was young who made me sit up and take notice because their greatness was just truly breathtaking. I agree with something your dad, you talked to your dad last week, and he said that even 50 years since he retired, he still regards Willie Mays as the best player he's ever seen. And I agree with that statement 100%. And I believe that to call Mays a five-tool player doesn't do him justice. He was a 10 in every aspect of the game, Speaks. And all you need to do is look at his stats page, and you will see that he has black type, which means he led the league, in every category. He led the league in everything at least once. Home runs, triples, stolen bases, slugging, total bases, everything, OPS, he literally could do it all. And one of the records that will probably stand forever is his putouts record. Mays made 7,000, more than 7,000 putouts in his career, and only two other outfielders, and I think they played in the 20s, you know, back in the teens and 20s, Tris Speaker and Ty Cobb are the only two that managed 6,000 putouts for their career. Mays caught everything that stayed in the ballpark, and even some that were out of the ballpark that he brought back in. He was the most complete player and the best player I ever saw. And, you know, some of these callers that are saying, you know, they really have to think twice about putting him on baseball's Mount Rushmore have to be out of their minds because he was a transformational ball player.
Without a doubt. Thank you, Stan. I saw this from Mark Simon over at Sports Info Solutions this week. Last year, Brenton Doyle led the major leagues in putouts, to Stan's point, as an outfielder with 373. Okay? He could get that total for 18 straight seasons and still catch fewer balls in the outfield than Willie Mays. And Mark also gave us this. If you started your career with 16 straight seasons of 40 homers, you don't catch Willie Mays. 16 straight years of 200 hits, 19 straight seasons of 100 RBIs, you don't catch Willie Mays. It's a ridiculous standard statistically, and then there is the humanity of it and the joy with which he played. And that's part of what we'll ask Bob Costas about 7 minutes. Mike in Quad Cities, thanks for holding, Mike. How are you? What you got?
I'm doing great, Spiggs. I was wondering if you could put your GM hat on.
Okay.
I want your center fielder.
Okay. For who? What team you want him on?
I'm on the Cubs.
You're on the Cubs. So you're the Cubs and you want Luis Robert? Is that what's going on?
I do, and I've already got my trade ready for you.
Bring it.
Nico Hoerner. Canario. Alcantara. Wick. And Brennan Davis.
That's a lot of ready-made MLB talent. Let's see. Canario,
who could play center right away. Brennan Davis, who could also possibly play center, gives them two toolsy outfielders. Boy, Kenny Williams would love those guys. And Nico, they don't want Nico. Nico gets paid too much.
The White Sox, I've heard it on the score right there. You've been waiting for a second baseman.
Forever, since Ray Durham. We've been waiting for a second baseman. Yeah. And Jordan Wicks. Wicks with the bad oblique right now. All right. I like the thought process. I don't think that gets it done. I don't think they'd want Nico. But the other pieces are interesting. He said Canario, Brennan Davis, and Jordan Wicks.
Yes.
And Alcantara.
Oh, and Kevin Alcantara. Oh, now you're piling on. That's three of the toolsy outfielders? All for a very toolsy outfielder in Luis Robert? It's fun. There's a deal to be made there. That's not it.
Did that Nico inclusion feel like a gut punch to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I felt it.
What are we going to do Tuesdays at 2:30?
I know, man. He's the best dude on radio, right?
Yeah, he's pretty damn good. I'm hoping to see him today. I want to talk to him about something that he said on our show, which was just freaking awesome.
He's always great on your guys' show.
I'll try and get to that before the end of the show, but maybe I'll talk about it with him tomorrow or later on today, and I can talk about it tomorrow when I'm back here on Parker and Spiegel. All right, looking forward to this. 40 years to the day of the Ryan Sandberg game. We talk to Bob Costas next on Hit and Run.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel, Sundays, 9 a.m. to noon.
You're listening to 670 The Score. We'll talk to Bob Costas in 10 minutes or so. It is the day of the Ryan Sandberg statue reveal. The Cubs series against the Mets concludes tonight from Wrigley Field. Pre-game coverage begins at 5:35 with first pitch at 6:10. And the Score is the only local broadcast of the game. You can listen to every Cubs game in Chicagoland with the free Odyssey app. To the phone lines we go. This is Stan in Bellwood on 670 The Score. Good morning, Stan. How are you?
I'm good. Good to hear you, Speaks, as usual. Great show. There's so much on the plate. I've been enjoying the show all day. I originally wanted to, when you began, I originally wanted to talk to you about the Mets, but you've been piling on so much more since then, so I've changed my mind. Two things I wanted to touch on, Mays and Sandberg. But this is the first opportunity that I've had to pay my respects. I'm still in mourning, Speaks, about Mays's passing. The question that's often asked of people is, you know, when did you realize that you were old? And for me, I'm officially certified as an old man because the three sports heroes of my youth are all gone now. Gale Sayers, Ollie, and Willie Mays were the three athletes when I was young who made me sit up and take notice because their greatness was just truly breathtaking. I agree with something you talked to your dad last week, and he said that even 50 years since he retired, he still regards Willie Mays as the best player he's ever seen. And I agree with that statement 100%. And I believe that to call Mays a five-tool player doesn't do him justice. He was a 10 in every aspect of the game, Speaks. And all you need to do is look at his stats page, and you will see that he has black type, which means he led the league, in every category. He led the league in everything at least once. Home runs, triples, stolen bases, slugging, total bases, everything, OPS. He literally could do it all. And one of the records that will probably stand forever is his putouts record. Mays made 7,000, more than 7,000 putouts in his career, and only two other outfielders, and I think they played in the 20s, you know, back in the teens and 20s, Tris Speaker and Ty Cobb are the only two that managed 6,000 putouts for their career. Mays caught everything that stayed in the ballpark, and even some that were out of the ballpark that he brought back in. He was the most complete player and the best player I ever saw. And, you know, some of these callers that are saying, you know, they really have to think twice about putting him on baseball's Mount Rushmore have to be out of their minds, because he was a transformational ball player.
Without a doubt. Thank you, Stan. I saw this from Mark Simon over at Sports Info Solutions this week. Last year, Brenton Doyle led the major leagues in putouts, to Stan's point, as an outfielder with 373. Okay? He could get that total for 18 straight seasons and still catch fewer balls in the outfield than Willie Mays. And Mark also gave us this. If you started your career with 16 straight seasons of 40 homers, you don't catch Willie Mays. 16 straight years of 200 hits, 19 straight seasons of 100 RBIs, you don't catch Willie Mays. It's a ridiculous standard statistically, and then there is the humanity of it and the joy with which he played. And that's part of what we'll ask Bob Costas about in about 7 minutes. Mike in Quad Cities, thanks for holding, Mike. How are you? What you got?
I'm doing great, Spiggs. I was wondering if you could put your GM hat on.
Okay.
I want your center fielder.
Okay. For who? What team you want him on?
I'm on the Cubs.
You're on the Cubs. So you're the Cubs and you want Luis Robert? Is that what's going on?
I do, and I've already got my trade ready for you.
Bring it.
Nico Hoerner. Canario. Alcantara. Wick. And Brennan Davis.
That's a lot of ready-made MLB talent. Let's see. Canario, who could play center right away. Brennan Davis, who could also possibly play center. Gives them two toolsy outfielders. Boy, Kenny Williams would love those guys. And Nico? They don't want Nico. Nico gets paid too much.
The White Sox, I've heard it on the score right there. You've been waiting for a second baseman.
Forever, since Ray Durham, we've been waiting for a second baseman. Yeah. And Jordan Wicks. Wicks with the bad oblique right now. All right. I like the thought process. I don't think that gets it done. I don't think they'd want Nico. But the other pieces are interesting. He said Canario, Brennan Davis, and Jordan Wicks?
Yes.
And Alcantara.
Oh, and Kevin Alcantara. Oh, now you're piling on. That's three of the toolsy outfielders, all for a very toolsy outfielder in Luis Robert. It's fun. There's a deal to be made there. That's not it.
Did that Nico inclusion feel like a gut punch to you?
Yeah, a little bit.
I felt it.
What are we going to do Tuesdays at 2:30?
I know, man. He's the best dude on radio, right?
Yeah, he's pretty damn good. I'm hoping to see him today. I want to talk to him about something that he said on our show, which was just freaking awesome.
He's always great on your guys' show.
I'll try and get to that before the end of the show here, but maybe I'll talk about it with him tomorrow or later on today, and I can talk about it tomorrow when I'm back here on Parker and Spiegel. All right, looking forward to this. 40 years to the day of the Ryan Sandberg game. We talk to Bob Costas next on Hit and Run.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.